Excuse me, everyone. The operator does need to inform all participants that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 1st of June, we have Alan Greenberg, Michaela Nalon, Tatiana Kramsova, Paul Diaz, James Bladel, Ron Wickersham, Jeff Eckhouse, Ted Suzuki, Mikey O'Connor, Barry Korb, Siva Mutasami, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Deborah Hughes, Helen Laverty. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Lisa Gruber-White. So I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes, and there's quite a large group this evening. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Okay, thank you very much. What I'd like to do today is to do a moderately quick review of the survey to identify, to look at the responses, to identify problems that there still are in terms of understanding and interpretation, and generally go over it so there aren't any surprises for people in Brussels when we do it in the public meeting. All right. I think the easiest way, I think everyone has their own ability to scroll, and so we'll do them one by one. The first question was should registrants have the ability to renew their name post-expiration? I must admit I was a little bit surprised by the results because we had 100% unanimity in the previous go-around that at this point all of the registrars and the one registry changed their minds and said essentially it should be a best practice, which is not an enforceable one, and registrants would not have the guaranteed ability. But the results are what they are, and we'll accept them. Any particular comments on that? I'll assume if someone has some comments, they'll call out. I do have a question for James, and James has his hand up, so we'll let him speak first.
Yeah, Alan, essentially I considered myself in both the status quo and the best practice camp. I just really couldn't really make a call on that fence. So it may have just been a contextual thing, but I think that if you, for you know, simplicity, if it makes more sense to include me into that column, I'm fine with that, either category.
Yeah, sorry, I really wasn't trying to single to put you in a different. From my perspective, since we don't have a code of practice where best practices are required or even required to get some level of certification or approval, a best practice is effectively the status quo. So I didn't differentiate from it from that perspective.
Yeah, and that's what I was struggling with a little bit. Is I think that determining what the difference would be between the best practice and the status quo, and then overthinking it a little bit about how that might play out for folks that don't have business models that I'm familiar with. So,
indeed, one of the recommendations I was going to make, we can discuss it now or discuss it at the end, is for most of these questions, I agree with you, there isn't a lot of difference between the two, and for simplicity, we may want to in any future versions, merge the two together. Because I in fact, don't think there's much difference unless the registrars get together on their own and come up with a unified code of practice or something like that. And I did have a question for you, James, though, on your comment on... I'm curious what kind of business models there might be where the safety net which registrants have traditionally had, and as we have noted, virtually all registrars give, may not be in the business model. Were you just covering the possibility, or did you have something in mind?
Just covering the possibility that I wasn't being too narrow in my understanding of the question.
Okay. Jeff?
Yeah, I think, Alan, I just wanted to address your point where you said you thought we had, you were at 100%, and I think... The difference is that I agree that when you say, hey, should the registrant, should they be able to recover it, yes, they should be able to recover it. But then when you have a sentence that says, should we change the policy so it incorporates the ability for at least a certain amount of time, where that at least a certain amount of time is not stated, we don't know it, the reason, that changes the equation. So I think that would be, well, at least me personally, that's the difference. And I just want to say one other thing is that I'm in complete agreement with James about the status quo versus the best practice. I actually didn't see the status quo box. I must have missed that, or else I probably would have checked that one as well.
Okay, so you're agreeing that in cases like this, there really is not a big difference between them. There might be one day when the concept of a best practice is more formally agreed.
I don't know, because I think that there is. I think it would be. I know some people say best practices are meaningless. Some people argue that, you know, there's an argument there, but I think that personally, I thought it would be better to send out a best practice and say we see this as a best practice, and I think that is better than the status quo. But I think that there isn't much of a difference. But I wouldn't leave. I wouldn't. What's the word? Combine those into one category.
Okay. Ron?
Yes, this is Ron. The wording that I thought that you were trying to include there, when I read it, for at least a certain amount of time, is to be more inclusive rather than less, although it seems to have had the opposite effect, so I'm kind of surprised as well on that.
Yeah.
On that point,
I believe in our drafting, the certain amount of time was the time was question number two. So it wasn't as if it was going to be completely undefined. It was just, let's separate the two questions.
Mm-hmm.
If any registrars want to change into the first category right now, we will take changes for a modest fee. No laughs, no hands.
Yeah, Alan, that's the problem. You say modest fee, and that's the same as a certain amount of time. I need to know the fee or the time to make the changes.
Tell you what, for anyone on this call, well, I'm like the TV ads, if you answer within 90 minutes, it's free. I'm going to have to flag my jokes so people know when to laugh.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, this is James. Feel free to move me into that column for best practices. It was probably a minor distinction in the way I was reading the question.
We can do that, but I was hoping to move people into the make it a policy.
That's not.
All right. On the amount of time, the majority of people, if you combine the best practice and the option and the policy, we end up with the majority saying 30 to 39 days, and outliers, which I'm one of them, on the less than 30 or more than 40 days. Don't think there's any real surprise there. James, you made a comment that you're assuming that these are minimums, and if we didn't word it that way, it should have been worded that way.
I think it was worded that way. I went back and read it after putting in my response, and it is worded that way.
Yeah.
I maybe just wanted to reinforce that.
Okay. We always like people who do better. Next question. I'm working from a paper document, by the way, so if I miss people's hands up, please call out. The indication of how many notices, and right now by inference we have two notices, the vast majority of people said that we should revise the language. There was some slight variation in the number, but in total we have something over 80% saying change the language, so I think we have a very clear statement there. James, you had a comment on, do we need to change the RAA? That's why we have consensus policy. I think the problem is I've been using the term change the RAA as a sort of generic thing. If something is within the picket fence, as is this, since it's related to things that were already changed by consensus policy under the EDDP, I'm assuming that the method to change the RAA would be consensus policy.
Okay, thanks.
And now there are other things, you know, make your contract clear or, you know, who knows what else, that clearly are not within the picket fence, and the only way that could be changed by the formal negotiated RIA change. So are the things we have are in two different categories, but I think your point is well taken that we should have been clearer and not just use the generic language and have people figure out for themselves, is it a picket fence consensus issue or is it a wider one? McKaylee?
Just on that point, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I would have voted the way I voted. The only option you gave us was to change the RAA, which I ran away from screaming.
But consensus policy changes the RAA by definition. The RAA has a provision that says if there are consensus policy is passed on such and on in the applicable areas, it de facto changes the RAA on the fly.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but the way it was worded was much narrower.
All right. Do we want to consider that for things within the picket fence, the recommend to change the RAA is an indication that we're saying we should write consensus policy on it. If people feel that was a difference and their vote would change because of it, then we can certainly handle that at this point. And if we do it prior to Brussels, so much the better. So if anyone feels so inclined, let us know now or sometime soon. But in my mind it was clear, but I guess we didn't actually say it anywhere. Okay, then we have the question on details on 1 second. Oh, this is the timing of the messages. And we had a very large majority, 71%, that basically said they should be the two messages should be reasonably spaced. We had a number of status quos, but I think we had a strong one. And again, James, yes, I think this would be done by consensus policy since it is related to expiration things which are within the picket fence. The next one was the grab bag of technologies and modes in which to notify registrants. As expected, the answers were all over the map. We seem to have a reasonable numbers in some of the areas. I was a little confused that in some of the areas people suggested that something both be changed by policy and be a best practice at the same time. And if anyone can offer any insight as to why we would need it to be a best practice or a recommendation, the wording we used in this particular question, in addition to being policy, I'm not quite sure.
This is Mikey.
Yeah,
go ahead. Being one of the ones who did that, I misinterpreted the question. And so I thought I was supposed to answer about the ones that I liked as policy or as best practice. So I just
okay.
put the same
well,
in yep. both places.
You're effectively saying if it doesn't make the policy, it should at least be a best practice.
I did it as well.
All right, and I would have done it if I had been sharp enough to think of that at the time.
Trust me, it wasn't because I wanted to do the survey any longer.
You just could have answered yes to everything then.
Oh, I was bloody tempted to say no to everything just on principle.
All right. Yeah, in any case, that one was all over the map. I think we're going to have to look at it carefully and try to correlate the recommendations and the policy ones to see if there's any real strong there. None pokes out other than there are a number of them which have at least support from half the group. Then there was the question on should there be other additional measures, ones like explicit warnings on the website, pointing to a tutorial on the ICANN site. And we had some moderate support for these. Again, if you look at the combination of policy and best practice, then there's a fair amount of support for some of these. And I think we should be able to come to closure on how we implement these. The next one is on status of on Whois message. We had almost unanimous support, and I should note, including Michael Young from a registry, that we should change this. Jeff, you're one of the people who said no, and I'm wondering, do you have a rationale, or is just again the feeling that
I think my comment was pretty much said it, which is says I'm not really against it. You know, it wasn't saying, oh, I think it's a bad idea. I just don't think that a change to the Whois status is going to affect the registrants that do not renew. I think people who have the ability and idea saying, oh, let me go check the Whois record, I don't think those are the people that we shouldn't be concerned with, but are our primary concern. And as I said, I'm not against it. I think it might be a lot of work. I don't think it's going to – this is mostly on the registry side for their work. But I don't – if we had to choose certain things to, let's call it prioritize, I would put this at the bottom list because I don't think it would have a huge effect. But that being said, I'm not against it at all.
Okay. Post-expiration notices. Yes, Helen.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify about the Whois status message. I mean, that's got to be the easiest thing for anybody to do. It's so easy. And we're really actually talking about the registry, so maybe the registry should respond to this, but if they have a less confusing message, because people will look, and as a registrar, I can say, people do look at the Whois and say, oh, my domain's renewed. I don't have to renew it. I don't have to pay to renew it. It says it's renewed. It says the expiry date is sometime in the future. And yes, not everybody looks at it. Maybe it's a small percentage, but it's an annoying percentage of people that get confused because they look at their domain and they say, it's been renewed, I don't need to renew it, I'm not paying for it. And when we put it into redemption, they get quite upset. So, yeah, but maybe talk to
Thank
the
you.
Registry.
Couldn't have said it better myself. When we were talking about this earlier, the difficulty seemed to arise that there may be other transactions from the registrar to the registry telling the registry, especially for Thick Whois, what the status is. And admittedly, there may be something like that. But I think the case, Helen, the case you just made is the strong one. Post-expiration notices. We have if you include the best practice, there's a moderate number of people who think that post-expiration notices should be mandatory. Not quite a majority of people think it should be a formal policy. On taking down the website, how to handle it's question 9 on port 80. Helen, as the previous question or the last?
Again, I'd like to just break in as a registrar. When we say things like we don't recommend any changes, it doesn't mean that we're not doing it. It just means that we don't want to force people to do it or encourage them very strongly because it does depend on their policy. But keep in mind the majority of registrars do send out lots of renewal notices and the majority also send out post-expiration reminders. So just because people may say don't change anything doesn't mean that they don't.
I think we need to be careful with saying things like the majority of registrars. Certainly the large number of the registrants are served by registrars who do that. But whether it's a majority of registrars is a completely different thing. And even in the group represented on this working group, it's not clear that it's the majority, since one of the large registrars doesn't send out post-expiration notices.
Yeah, but a fair number do, and the ones that don't often do have reasons why they don't do it. I mean, if you're a registrar, you actually do want your registrants to renew their domain, so if you feel that you've already sent out enough for whatever reason, or you've changed the whois so that the domain DNS so that it shows a site saying it's got to renew, you may feel you've done enough.
Yeah, I
think part of this seems to think that registrars are stupid and they don't realize they should, encourage their registrants to renew. And I think this is kind of missing because most registrars are going to want their.
We talk a lot
renew.
About.
It's kind of like you're trying to force them into sending renewal notices. It's like when you're in a bar and your beer's going down. Doesn't the server usually come and offer you another beer? They don't usually say, "Oh, you don't want another beer. We'll leave them alone."
Yeah, we talk about different business models, and registrars do have different business models. And as has been mentioned innumerable times, a lot of these things are not aimed at the large registrars, but at the small ones, and very particularly the resellers, who don't necessarily follow what you might consider best practices.
Again, they often have reasons, and often if they're doing it, the resellers, they know that the resellers are sending out renewal notices if they aren't. So it's just something to bear in mind, when you say you don't recommend any changes, it's like, let's not rock the boat too much, because some people do have very good systems working that may not be in line with this.
And perhaps vice versa. Okay, on taking down websites, the majority of people say it should be done. Again, there's a difference of should it be done as a best practice or should it be done as a requirement. A small number of people say maintain the status quo. On email, we again had a reasonable number of people. I guess it ended up being exactly half saying take down the email, and the other people, again, status quo, which means in some cases there are... I just realized, Marika, James seems to have voted in both categories here. Was that actually possible in this question? Or is that a typo?
This is Marika. Which question are you looking at?
We're looking at question 10.
I'm near Chicago. I don't know if that helps.
Yes, the question is...
early vote often.
Where is the survey company located?
Yeah, the first vote early vote often. That's our motto here in this.
Hey, I come from Quebec. That's where we start and then go from there.
It's probably a typo. I just need to figure out.
Okay, well, we'll need to figure out who it is. Probably James didn't vote in two different places. I didn't quite understand Ron's comment. And maybe Ron can elaborate just a little bit.
Okay, yeah. Hi, this is Ron. Yeah, well, if you weren't clear on the tail end, if a lot of people have very long time to live on their DNS records, and so frequent correspondence, the name server serving them will continue. It won't even check the root zone to see if there's any changes because it's within the 30, 60, or in some cases, people have very long expiration times on their MX records.
But if they do, they live with the results.
Yeah, right. But it's also considered good internet friendliness or good practice for not making every DNS record very short, 5 minutes. Otherwise, the DNS traffic would zoom up. So, important, but
yeah, but that's just the fact of that's a fact of IP protocols.
Right,
we can't change that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So even if the zone is deleted, the frequent correspondence mail may continue to work even 6 months after it's deleted.
Well,
It probably won't work, but it
may go somewhere.
Well, it would still go to... Yeah, right. Well, that's the one... No, you did bring up a point, though, which I hadn't thought of. Well, no, they would cache the A record at the MX record, because the MX record can't be an IP address. It's only a
a host name.
But in any case, we have no control over
what time to live
the user puts on it when he still has custody of the domain.
Correct. Yeah.
So he or she lives with whatever they say.
Uh-huh.
I was more curious about the several days that we used several days essentially to give registrars a reasonable window in which to do the action and not try to demand that things be done within, 12 minutes, when that may not always be practical for a whole bunch of reasons, including things that are scheduled on a daily basis and that kind of thing. So there was I don't think there was any intent to keep on running a mail server on someone's behalf. So I'm just wondering, did we word the question wrong or? Okay, let's take that one offline, because I think we want to make sure that we don't have something there that's confusing. The last question in this section is, what do we do with all the other ports? And I'm a little bit confused that people think that we should take down websites, maybe we should take down mail, but we shouldn't take down things that happen to work on other IP ports. And I'm not sure if anyone who said status quo in this one, where they didn't say status quo in the previous ones, have any insight on this. And the answer is no. Okay. We do have a majority of people who said everything should stop working. Okay. Next we have inter-register transfer. A mixed bag. This is essentially the one that says says a registrar cannot refuse a transfer if the registrant can figure out how to request it. And I was a little surprised that we had as few people as we did recommending that registrants be allowed to. That registrars should not be able to block the request because of technicalities. Again, I'm not sure if this is a question wording issue or if indeed that's the way everyone feels. Okay, contractual conditions. The first one is, To put things in such a way that the registrant has a reasonable chance of understanding, whether it's in a reworded contract or FAQs or other related materials. We have an overwhelming majority who believe that this should be done either as a best practice or as policy. The fee.
Wait, Alan, it's Jeff. Hand.
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember if you said you weren't looking at the hand.
Yeah, no, I try to glance up occasionally, but I miss them at times.
Okay. So here was my comment and why I have a huge problem with option A. And I, for the people that voted for it, I'd love to hear some answers to this. Recommend ICANN to put in place rules that mandate some level of clarity and predictability in registration agreements. My comment was, at the bottom, very unclear who will be the entity that defines clarity, and will ICANN have to review all agreements and decide on clarity? It's love to hear how, who's the decider of what's clear and to whom, and how would this ever work, and that's sort of reason why, I said maintain the status quo, and I can see in a best practice, but I'd love to hear from people who are saying, hey, let's change it. Like, how would that ever actually work? I'm just curious. If somebody said this is a great practice, here's our definition of clear, who's the arbiter of it is, I guess, my main question on that.
James is next in the queue. I'll give you a very brief answer, which is not really an answer. The RAA, as modified in this year, already uses the word clear And you're right, it's not defined, and I'm not sure who would define it and who would judge. And I sometimes think registrars agree to that because of the lack of definition of clear. James?
Yes, Alan, it's James. I see my comment, and I see that four individuals voted for status quo, but I don't see my initials in any category. I'm assuming that's where my vote registered, and I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, it's interesting. We do say that they added up to 17, and there's a comma after Mason's name, so I'm assuming there's a missing JB there.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's. I just wanted to clarify that was the case because I'm known to.
And
you know, get
and you took for you time. Took the right parentheses with you.
Enrique, I'm sorry for missing that. The updated version. I think after all the reports, I just missed some bits here and there.
So far, we've identified two pages out of the 800 you've produced in the last week that you had one character missing on or one word missing on. It's going to go on your performance report, you know.
Right.
Were there anything else on this question? All right. If we go on to, should the fee be shown on the website? And this one got me a little bit because the RAA, the EDDP and the RAA already required that the RGP fee be shown. And I'm wondering what is the objection against having the more common fee being shown as well. And, James, you said the RGP should be clearly stated in the registration agreement. I think EDDP says it must be shown on the website if there is a website.
Well, that was my question, in fact, was... and I think, you know, again, like I think Jeff's comment earlier, I think I got hung up a little bit on clearly displayed, because I think without going into position and font sizes and contrast colors and things like that, I just wasn't sure how far we wanted to go with clearly displayed. So that's probably why I got hung up on this.
I took the easy way out in this one. If you remember correctly, we had some wording in the first version that implied that the price I see when I register by my domain name will be the price when it comes up for renewal 10 years later. And we changed it to actually copy verbatim the words in the RAA right now regarding the RGP price. So, again, I'm not sure what clear place means, but those are the words that have been agreed to already. So we either need to go back and erase those or something. Cheryl?
Thank you, Alan. Cheryl here. Just because I, believe me, it's not because I want to talk. I do have something to contribute in by way of minor example, but I don't think it's too minor an example with the discussion that was going on this question and the last one for clearly and clearly displayed. In the case then, James, when you asked about font size, et cetera, the Australian Domain Name Industry Code of Practice in just our tiny little .au, I admit, so, you know, thus my reference to a small example, does in fact give minimum and max minimum font size. It does give how many, you know, clicks down and where the link should be for where this information is on the web. So in the case of at least a .au, the industry code done by the industry has decided what clear and clearly displayed is. In the case of the Australian telecommunications industry, it's done by the industry council in combination with the consumer councils. So it's not impossible, and I guess it depends on your experience set, to have things like clearly and clearly displayed, quite, pardon the pun, clearly defined.
Yeah, I think the corollary to it is, as difficult as it may be, and Cheryl's implying that it's not all that impossible to define clearly, it's pretty easy to define things that are not clear, and I, in fact, was looking for a registration agreement either registration or who is, I don't remember, with it on one registrar's website, and it is in very tiny type in a light shade of gray, which is there, but it doesn't stick out at you very much. So, you know, the corollary, I think, is there. But regardless, the word is already being used in existing contract, and compliance has been auditing registrars to see if they're compliant with it using that wording. And I certainly haven't heard that they've had any complaints that their interpretation of clear is unreasonable. Jeff?
I'm sorry. Are we back onto, I think it's question 14, or did we move on to another question? I'm sorry if I'm just, I just needed a point just to bring us.
I think we're on 15.
15. Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry, I just got, because we were, I think we were just jumping back between some questions, so. We're on 15. Now.
We're on the word clearly in 15. Paul?
Yeah, thanks, Alan. Question for the group here. Maybe some of the confusion that's going around, we're not being as careful with our terms as we have been elsewhere, in that we cite a provision from the existing RA that talks about redemption grace period. But we're talking, given how these questions at least have been put together, it seems like just the auto-renew grace period that we're talking about here in 15. Should that be redemption grace, in which case it would appear in the next section of our survey?
No, we are talking about the price to get the domain back 4 days after expiration.
Yeah.
As an example.
Okay, and that's the way I did read it. I would just say for ourselves as a group when we're looking ahead to Brussels to really underscore that the contractual requirement that exists is for redemption grace, then that, you know, and that period doesn't begin until X number of days after the expiration, et cetera. I just think it's going to be very easy for people in the audience that have not been involved in this to get very confused about what point in time we're talking about. And, of course, the redemption grace incurs a fee, an extra fee, at the registry level that is passed through as well. So,
yeah, no, none of these questions were referring to the fee for redemption grace period. That was addressed very well in EDDP.
Yeah.
The problem in EDDP is it did not address the regular fee, the far more common one.
Right.
And this is trying to make up, fill that gap.
Okay, and again, just for the group, then when we talk about what ICANN compliance may or may not be doing to look into this, their review, if I remember correctly, was to make sure that registrars are in fact posting the redemption grace period fees.
That's correct. The reason I brought up redemption is there is a provision in the RAA now which talks about posting it clearly, and that compliance is auditing that particular requirement.
Yeah.
That was just in response to the comments that clear is undefined and it's untenable to have such an undefined word in the agreement.
Yeah.
I'm just saying
very
it already
good,
exists in another context, and it's being used.
No problem. I'm following you. I'm just thinking
okay. If
we're not part of this group and have not been enmeshed in this for a while, somebody's hearing it, seeing these results during our session in Brussels, it's going to be very easy to get confused, and we'll just need to remain very careful that we define whatever period of time we're talking properly.
Yes, and I think the question, I don't want to read it out loud right now, but I think we're talking about the recovery after expiration, which the implication is immediately after expiration, prior to a delete. But your point is well taken, and that maybe we need to make sure that we're not confusing it with the RGP. Okay, question 16 now is on the RGP. We had a majority, a significant majority, saying that the that registry should implement. As a matter of fact, we had 100% majority saying that registry should implement the RGP. For registries, because of safe harbor provisions, I misread it. We had 65% saying have a consensus policy, 35 status quo. I was reading that as the as a best practice. So we have a majority, but not 100% saying the registry should do it. Now that would have very significant impact on new registries, because the track record at this point is that that new registries, as they form, do not implement the RGP. Should registrars be required to offer redemption under the RGP if the registry offers it? And again, we had a majority suggesting that indeed we should. And lastly, the transfer during RGP, a grab bag of answers all over the place, with most saying don't do anything. And if indeed we end up doing what the previous majority says, that is, require it, then there's much less chance, much less rationale for a transfer during RGP, because you aren't in the position of a registrant not having any alternatives. Hold up, my screen has just gone blank. Any more comments specifically on the survey? Okay. Do we have general belief that, or agreement, that we offer a form of this survey, and I say a form only in that the problems that we've identified in this call and from the comments in the existing survey saying some rewording needs to be done, that we offer this on a wider scale. There was a concern raised in a previous meeting that this is not something that normally gets done during the policy development process, and I think we have an interesting counterexample going on right now. Although not a formal PDP, we have the board public participation committee doing a survey, even more flexible one, where participants can add options to the survey on the fly, and as a way of trying to get input from the people who are involved in the process. Michele?
Considering how awkward it is to use that survey, I wouldn't consider it to be an example.
I don't plan on following that model. The precedent is what I'm talking about.
Okay, now, because that bloody thing, I tried to fill it out and practically gave up. I eventually managed to do, but I think it took like 3 tries.
I think we've come to the conclusion there are no good survey tools. Marika, I think, lost a fair amount of her hair in trying to craft this particular survey into the rules that the survey tool allowed, and as a result, we saw some very wordy questions just because they didn't allow more flexible formats. So, noted, I think, is the right answer to that. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Some other people suggested as well, you know, if it would be possible to look into options where you can either, you know, print your own survey results or save it and complete it later. I'm going to look into another survey tool that's, for example, being used now, I think, for the public comment form on the meetings, which I think uses Big Pulse. So
that's the one Michele said he hates.
Oh. Well, okay. Well, if anyone has any good suggestions on a survey tool that they've used, because, for example, what is a challenge with this one as well, that, you know, in order to identify who voted what, I have to go through all the individual survey results and, you know, Adam and Edouard, there's some missing because, you know, obviously I missed a few. So I really would like as well a tool that, you know, one push of the button and the results roll out, you know, with the option to identify who's doing what. So so I see Michele is already making suggestions there. So I'm happy to look at some some other options to see if there's a survey tool that works better, because, you know, I think we'll probably have more surveys in the future, because it seems to be a tool that, that working groups do like to use in order to assess opinions and views.
With that name, I would have thought James would be suggesting it. That was a play on words. Jeff?
Yeah, I was actually thinking, I was going to say that joke that I agree that most of the survey tools, the standalone ones, are not that good. Unfortunately, the really good survey tools are usually are part of a larger CRM package and not something that would probably work for this group. So I think that they're all going to have their pluses and minuses. But I think my main question here is, so many of these questions in the survey are so nuanced and detailed, and we've gone over them. And I have a fear of sending this out to the general public. You know, well, let's say, I won't say general public, but to a broader group, because a lot of the meaning and the discussion would not be conveyed through this. And so that's one part. And two, I guess, is my general question is, what is the goal of sending it out to a group of a larger group of people who have not been involved in this working group? What are we hoping to get from those? Let's say an extra 50 people fill it out. What would you expect from those results? Is my main question on this.
Okay, let's go through the list first, James.
Thanks, and then really almost to the letter of what Jeff was going to say is that one, we need to tighten up some of the language in places, because I've been working with this group since the beginning and I made some mistakes in interpreting the questions. And two, looking ahead, you know, if we have an area where the working group splits, let's say, you know, 8 people in one direction and 5 people in another direction, and we get 50 people responding chocolate ice cream, you know, what do we do with that? And then does that then set the expectation that we're going to put something completely new that no one on the working group has considered? So I'm just trying to think a couple of steps ahead, and maybe I'm getting a little too far ahead, but I just wanted to start that conversation. And it sounds like Jeff has already opened that door.
Cheryl?
Thank you very much. Two things. There was only one when I put my hand up, but now there's two. It's handy to be at the end of the line sometimes. I was going to mention on the issue of various survey tools, for Michaeli having frustrations with the Big Pulse tool, I suspect, as I've recently had the opportunity to work with Big Pulse on designing something that for some other purpose, the difficulties of Michaeli and not being able to have things saved, et cetera, was a matter of choice. The actual tool itself does have all of those options, but either the people who put the survey together for ICANN didn't know about it or didn't want to use it for whatever reason. So if Marika's doing doing an analysis of what survey tools will meet needs for the future, she should actually talk to Ralph McKay, just drop an email and he will ring her back, because it has far more capabilities and does all of the back-end statistics and identifications as one option, right through to very, very public ones that people can come in and out of forevermore. So there's a full gamut. So, but actually talk to the tool designers and not just look at how it's been probably badly set up by someone else in ICANN before. But then my other concern was, so that's actually the bit I wasn't going to say. My concern is, because of the complexity and nuances of some of these questions, I was going to suggest, could we look at a subset of questions and some carefully worded and defined explanations where we've come a cropper on what is the definition of clearly and et cetera, et cetera. I think for an average punter, most people would give up and run away screaming from the survey as it is at the moment.
So
I damn near did, and I'm motivated to be in it.
So you're saying find the really important questions we need to ask a wider audience and ask those, not necessarily the whole gamut of them.
You start talking port somethings and they're going to go, oh, I'm not going to say it because I'm, you know, fill in the dotted lines, sake. You know, it could be a very worthwhile exercise. I'd like to do the exercise, but not with this particular bunch of questions as they are now. A small, notice that, small, essential subset, absolutely.
I think that's an interesting comment. And you, of course, are willing to work with various people on trying to develop what those are.
Cool.
Okay.
That should probably come out of Brussels.
Yeah, we wanted to include it as part of the public comment that is referenced the survey as part of the public comment. So we don't have a lot of time coming out of Brussels. We're going to have to do at least a draft of it going in, I would think, and then, if necessary, change it because of what happens during the public consultation there. But that's probably doable. Jeff?
Yeah, sorry. I'm still trying to figure out what the average punter is, but that's all. But back to so say we do this, and here's the point I just wanted to clarify. Again, I'm not against that doing, like, a smaller subset of the survey for the questions that we deem are more important, and, you know, we clarify these questions and we put it out to this other group of, you know, whatever number of people. I'm just trying to figure out is that the best use of our time? Let's call it Marika's time. What are we going to get out of that if we get the results, say, from another 50 people or so? It's how will that improve the process and move us along? Will it? If it is, let me know, because I'd love to, you know, somehow wrap this up, but I don't see it at the moment with this additional survey.
Any other comments before I chime in? Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. Just to follow up with what Jeff's saying, I mean, my view with an ICANN working group is that, you know, ICANN's not a pure democracy. It's a representative one. People self-selected to get involved in the working group. A bunch of us have been here for many, many, many months. ICANN then has public comment periods for everybody to weigh in. And you know, we take all that on board in the second round and refine the things and come up with a final report. I just see opening up this survey or even a subset of it to anybody who happens to walk into the room in Brussels as just an opportunity for all sorts of mischief and misleading.
There was no intent of doing it in Brussels.
Okay, but even after, you know, I mean, as we've all said, we all had confusion about questions and whatnot. I mean, I just see it as really, really difficult to try and boil this down and then ultimately, you know, come up with something that is so black and white that once you have the results, you can consider it hard data and then try and build policy around that. You know, these things are very nuanced, very complex. That's why we have this working group and why we all commit to what is typically over a year's worth of our time, you know, kind of grinding through it. I just feel that, you know, if we try and open this up, again, except for this one other thing, it's essentially precedent setting, and, you know, it's probably going to just create many, many more headaches for us as a group. I think the existing mechanisms that we have, the polls we've done within the group, the comment periods that we're soliciting, feedback from constituencies, et cetera, you know, those are more than adequate to guide us in crafting whatever we may come up with in the final end.
All right. Anyone else before I chime in? No? Okay. I guess I'm a little bit confused about all this negative reaction because I just see this as a vehicle with which to collect the public comments other than send us your pure text. That instead of identifying in the report, you know, these are the six things that we would particularly appreciate public comment on, we suggested that we do it in some form of a survey. Now, we can change that at this point, and, you know, instead of having an automated machine-based survey, we can identify the five questions that we want people to answer in their public comments. I just think we're likely to get better responses if we craft the questions so we so we get yes-no answers instead of, things that again, to use whoever mentioned that they say chocolate ice cream, that we don't know what category it fits in. I just view a survey as a simplistic way of soliciting the input during the public comment period. Because we're only going to be asking them about issues that are discussed in depth in the report. Cheryl?
Thank you. It is, in fact, certainly from my mind, just a mechanism, a tool that is integrated into the equivalence of a formal public comments in the traditional way public comments have been explored and indeed exploited by those who practice in ICANN. We've had significant input in other fora within ICANN, including looking at the accountability and transparency of ICANN, where the use of more simple, more metric-based, less open to interpretation by whoever is doing the interpretation of what was meant by subsection 5 of paragraph 53 of someone's text in a public comment, that the use of a set of tools can be a very good way of assuring that it's not the nuances and situations that we're dealing with in this work group don't simply happen in the analysis phase of any public comment period, as it does then go into, or perhaps not, into policy development later on. So if we do a survey, it would simply be part of the toolbox, part of the toolkit, and offer some metric-based stuff. Just as many public comments say, please answer or please focus on the following five issues. Those same five issues can be turned into far more simplistic and metric-driven answers in a survey tool. It also encourages those people who are not verbally dexterous and particularly practiced, insert here lobbyists and most of those who know how to influence policy development in the GNSO in ICANN, please, and close that insert, from having too great an influence and finding the follow-on frustrations where satisfaction isn't held by those who are not practiced in the use of the current public comment tool, and I use that in inverted commas because I think it's an abortionate thing rather than a tool for getting their way, and so that it can be a transparent and it can be an accountable experience. And I'll now get off my soapbox.
Okay. I'll just point out, Jeff is next, but I'll just point out that there have been other public comment periods in the past that used other tools, some of them I think abominable.
Yeah.
The one used for the President's Policy Committee, sorry, I've lost the name, the President Something Committee, last year, where they were looking at what has to be changed in ICANN, and they used a tool instead of text public comments, which I thought was quite inappropriate because it was the sole tool as opposed to one of the options. But, this is not really new ground we're on. Okay, Jeff?
Yeah, just last comment. So thank you for answering that question of what it would be used for, and that is, I guess the goal would be to get more public comments on this. Then my next point being that if we decided to do that, I think we would need the questions themselves to be, I don't know if the word is sanitized, but just reviewed to make sure that they're not leading one way or the other. I think all of us have been so deep in this, we know, the issues, and as, the word nuance keeps coming up. So I want to make sure it's clear that we don't feel that it's leading one way or the other, because we wouldn't want something to go through to public comment that does not seem impartial.
Well, I'm assuming that although anyone else can participate, that we'll start off with what was the drafting team for this survey, which was me, Paul, James, and I think Mikey, and Cheryl has volunteered to add herself into that. And, I don't want to restrict it, but I think a smaller group is likely to come up with something, is likely to come up with something quicker. But if anyone else wants to be involved or the whole group, we can certainly do that. We're starting going to get close to running out of time, and I want to do one or two other things. But Can we say we have marching orders to go ahead with this and try to craft something which is as clear and unleading as possible? I think we do have some obligation to put it forward soon after Brussels, although we haven't specified an exact date. James?
Yeah, just real quickly, I wanted to point out that, you know, if there's some way to de-emphasize the numbers, you know, if 75 individuals have a very, very bad idea, but one individual has a very, very good idea, I don't think that we should necessarily treat them unequally. And that's my problem with the survey, is that I think that really good ideas could, you know, run the danger of being lost in favor of really popular ideas. And so I just wanted to make sure that
we may want to change the word from survey so it's not implied that we're obliged to accept the majority rule.
Yeah, thank you, because that also could come back to haunt us when we publish a final report and someone says, why did you go against the will of, you know, 95 individuals, that sort of thing.
If I may, we've all had recent experiences of that. The manner of waiting, Cheryl here, the manner of waiting responses, and indeed waiting who the responses come from, is something that a good survey tool will in fact do. Or should I say a good polling tool will do.
Yeah, I think so. And to be blunt, we have that same situation within this working group, where registrars are represented far more numerously than the various other groups. If we had gone back to the now out of out not what was this? No longer allowed or appreciated task force, you know, we would have defined numbers, and then you can take votes and look at percentages, but we're not. We're on a different model right now, and I think we have to factor that in. And the chocolate ice cream answer is applicable. If you look at any of the public comment periods right now, there will always be a few that say don't approve .xxx. No matter what the question is they're asking, some people will say don't approve .xxx. Those answers typically are just discarded. But I think we have to factor in the concept that we will be getting people in who aren't not necessarily going to have studied the matter with any amount, and we're going to have to wait those answers. And I think we're going to have to use some modest amount of intelligence and discretion in doing that. So I just think we have to make sure not to set expectations. Helen?
We keep coming up with the chocolate ice cream scenario.
Someone mentioned that I like chocolate ice cream.
Yeah, but I think that in the early stages, that's a very useful tool, because if you're getting a lot of responses that don't quite follow what the survey is doing, then you know that the survey isn't complete and a lot of people do have more questions. So in the early stages, you really want to incorporate as much as flexibility as possible, but as we narrow down the questions, then gradually we'll get to a yes or no. But I think you should always have an undecided or third one as well, but eventually you may want to start removing the ability to add chocolate ice cream once we've really, really narrowed it down. But
I'm not sure how many more versions of this we want to go through.
But if we're still getting chocolate ice cream,
survey is trying to wear thin with some of us.
Yeah, but if we're still getting chocolate ice cream, it sort of implies that the survey is not doing everything it should do.
Well. No,
especially if you get a lot of chocolate ice cream comments, or maybe people like me that say beer, it means that some things are not being included. Yeah, there you are, my ice cream.
On the other hand, if the question we were asked is what color, no, I hold the chocolate ice cream is a good answer for that. Never mind. Chocolate ice cream applies, yes, you're right. If it's completely out in left field, which means they didn't understand the question, that's a different issue.
But if you get a lot of people saying chocolate ice cream or beer, then it's probably not just the one person that didn't understand the question. Either the survey is really, really bad, or the survey has not included important options like do you like chocolate ice cream and or beer.
Since this will be the third version, let's hope we'll do better. Pray we'll do better. Anyone else?
If I may.
Yes, please.
Part of when Marika is exploring some alternate tools, one of those I'd be jumping at is the one that says, give me your current selection of questions and I'll give you back the sample questions, and then you tell me if I've made the take and if they are in fact meeting your needs. So in fact, rather than those of us who are in a forests and trees situation, and that's the problem with these deep and complex questions, because they're set by work group participants for work group participants, it allows us to go down these, you know, blindingly dark pathways and stumble over how to define clearly. You know, get it done on the keep it simple, stupid process. You know, that's how you're going to do exactly what Helen says. Tease out, are we talking crap? Is it understandable? And can we get anything meaningful out of the other end of it?
Don't think anyone's going to disagree. Doing it right is a different matter, but...
Well, that's where professional, as opposed to in-house DIYs, might be needed to be looked at. I mean, there is an art to survey and polling. There is a huge industry out there doing it. And what we've been doing is tinkering around the edges and doing some DIY stuff. And by here, I mean ICANN has, not just this work group, don't get me wrong. We need to do it a lot smarter. And maybe that's something public participation need to look at. But let's try and do the best we can if we do it at all.
But the other thing which they do and we never do is exactly what was being referred to a little earlier of, you know, we'll recall it waiting, but essentially is the... Are the people answering the questions representative of the community we're trying to look at?
Alan, a professional tool will do all of that.
Yeah, no,
the other thing is we can't have Marika busy slaving her life away doing the analysis. The analysis should be practically auto-generated. There should be no interpretation, time, energy, and bias ever bought into anything, because it should be so damn plain if it's properly designed.
In a
perfect world, which I'm clearly not living in. Anyway,
okay.
I'm shutting up now.
McKaylee?
Just to back up Will's point, you know, if you're going to use a tool that's automated, then you don't need to have Marika wasting her time doing things
exactly.
The tool for. And apart from anything else, I'm backing up poor Cheryl because it sounds like her throat's going to implode.
Or I am.
That too.
I think the only question is the balancing the tools that we should be using with budget and skills and access and a number of other things and the time frame we're working on. But... conceptually, I agree, and let's see how close we can come. Okay, is there anything else we need to do today? We are the session in Brussels. We have outlined already. I think Marika and I have a fair amount of work to do on that. I haven't heard any other, or I haven't asked, but I'll ask now if there's anyone else who wants to play an active role in the session in Brussels. And we will include you in that. If not, then Marika and I will take the lead role. And Ron, are you addressing this or something else?
No, something else.
Okay, so
yeah, this is Ron.
Go ahead. We seem to have no one else speaking on that. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to bring up the possibility of. Adding, after we come up with our recommendations, adding in our report, another public comment period, because the main purpose of a public comment period that reviews the report is to comment on the actions that we've taken. And since we haven't put actions in yet, I wanted to get a public comment period for those when we do come up with the actions,
I would
recommendations.
I would tend to be inclined to say we should do that, But I think we also need to look at the overall process and see, is there going to be a public comment period immediately following what we do or not? So, but I tend to agree that we haven't actually made firm recommendations, therefore we should open up at that point. Any other comments on that before we go to Siva? Silence, I take as acceptance. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not traveling to Brussels, and will the meetings be remote and enabled?
I'm assuming most of them will be. Marika, do you know anything about this particular one?
Yes, this is Marika. I think we still need to provide a requirement, or we'll be asked to provide a requirement for remote participation. So I'll definitely foresee Adobe Connect Room, as we've been using for the sessions, and I presume there will also be audio streaming.
Hold on. Go ahead, Marika. We'll try again.
Yes, so I was saying we still need to discuss the requirements with the meeting staff for remote participation, but I'm presuming that it will be similar to what was provided in at the previous meeting, so audio streaming and Adobe Connect facilities.
Yes, I was assuming that a session talking about a PDP would have those implicitly, but if you could check and let us know.
I will.
Okay. Anything else? Then let's talk about future meetings. I am probably busy next week, and my inclination is to say unless we have something pressing that that requires action of the whole committee, of the whole working group, that we do not hold a meeting until after Brussels. The week next week is the 8th, and the week of the 15th, people are just starting travel, so typically there's not a lot of time to participate in teleconferences unless they're really urgent. And my inclination is that we have pretty well come to closure on this part of our work, and that a meeting next week is not likely to be a very productive one for the whole group, although the smaller group trying to figure out what to do with this quasi-survey, I think we'll have to meet perhaps at the same time is something that we can, or somewhere sometime near it, is something we can look at, but we'll talk about that privately. Well, I see an infinite number of check marks. I'll take that as support. Are people going to be back from Brussels in time to have a meeting on the 29th in general? Marika, are you back then? Cheryl says no. James says no. Paul says no.
I'll still be here, so.
Oh, that's right. Your travel time to come back from the meeting is not very long.
It's relatively short this time round.
You don't even have to take a train like some people do.
Nope.
All right. I see a number of X's. Therefore, I would suggest that we meet again actually a little bit over a month from now, although most of us will be meeting in Brussels. And by then, everything should have been cast in concrete. I will ask for some, again, if we come out of Brussels not knowing exactly what we're doing in the public comment period, then we may need an ad hoc meeting the week after Brussels for some of us. But let's schedule the next formal committee meeting for the 6th of July. And unless there are any other issues, I thank you for your help, and let's get on with this.
Okay.
And Cheryl, don't talk. How many more? How many more conference calls do you have? How many more conference calls do you have today?
You don't want to know. Bye.
Bye.